Welcome to High Tide, Low Tide, the podcast where we talk about all things mental health and where we share our stories with the knowledge that it could just be the lifeline of hope for someone who is hurting and afraid that they're the only one. I'm your host, Lisa Scanlon, and I am so glad that you're here with me today. Hey guys, and welcome back to High Tide, Low Tide. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today is a solo episode, and I am going to be talking through something that has been a big part of 2024, a big part of even, I would say, the last 8 months or so of my life. And that is my fertility journey and going through the process of doing an egg retrieval, which I have just completed my first round a week ago, just over a week ago now. So I've shared a lot of this on my social media. And so some of you will have heard or seen some of this already, but I remember when I started looking further into it, I actually went through and listened to a lot of other people's podcasts about their experiences, and I found that really helpful. So I thought I would put my experience into my own podcast, seeing as I have this platform, and hopefully it might be able to help somebody else at a time where they're looking to collect some more information for them to start down their own path. So here we are. So I guess I just never really thought that I would ever be in a situation where I would be looking to freeze my eggs. And, you know, even as those words come out of my mouth, I'm sure that just about every single person who ends up in this situation has never probably envisioned that they will be. So that seems like such a ridiculous thing to have even said. But I guess I always knew that I would like to have a family of my own. Growing up as a young girl myself, like I always just felt like, you know, it would happen at some point in the future, and that there would just be a time where I was ready to start that family and I would start trying and it would just happen. And I've done a lot of really wonderful things with my life, and I have absolutely no regrets at all about how I have spent my time. And when I look back, you know, at my life and the partners that I've had, I can only remember really picturing myself having a family with my very first boyfriend, like my high school boyfriend. And, you know, we were together from, I think when I was 16. And, you know, I always envisioned we're together for quite a few years, you know, having this ideal like timeline of, you know, engaged at 21, married at 23, kids at 25, which as a 36-year-old now just seems crazy because I think, you know, that's still so young. And I had this idea of, you know, having the kids down at the local, you know, football club where he played on weekends and stuff like that. So, you know, it was always this, you know, something that I just expected to happen one day. And, you know, obviously that relationship didn't work out, and I had other long-term partners since that. Obviously that's been quite a while now, but it just sort of never really had that same feel. And then as a lot of you would know as well, I went to live in Indonesia for 5 years. So I was living in Gili Trawangan, and that is essentially Never Never Land. Like it is often referred to as Never Never Land, and it's basically where people go to not grow up. And, you know, I had this incredible life over there, and, you know, I was working as a scuba diving instructor and meeting new people every day. And I did have a partner while I was living there as well. And I just think I was in a completely different phase of life, and, you know, thinking about starting a family or, you know, getting married and those things weren't really front of mind. And as I said before, I have zero regrets about how I spent that time. But then obviously COVID hit and I came back to Australia and things changed in my life. And at this point I was, when was that? 2020. So 4 years ago. So I was 32. So I've entered my 30s very much so. So, you know, as we know with female fertility, you know, you are born with all of the eggs that you're ever going to have. And as time goes on, you have less and the quality gets lower as well. So when I came back from Indonesia, I originally was waiting around to go back again and at some point realized that that wasn't going to happen. So I decided that I wanted to just kind of check in on, I guess, where my body was at, given that, as I said, like I'm in my 30s now and, you know, I hate the idea of a biological clock, but realistically, that's exactly what it is. And it's something that I just started to have some awareness around, I guess. So I ended up going to my GP and asking, or, you know, having a bit of a conversation with him and getting a referral to have my AMH levels tested, which is essentially kind of a way of knowing sort of where your egg count is at, or your egg levels, or however you want to look. I should have prefaced this episode by saying I'm absolutely not a doctor, and there is probably going to be something within this episode that I don't quite explain correctly, but it's my understanding of it. So I'm going to apologize right here and now for that part. But if you're going through the process of, you know, looking to freeze your eggs or going down the IVF path or anything like that, you're going to find that you are absolutely inundated and overwhelmed with information. And I'm no different to that. So I've done my best to kind of understand all the different parts, but it is a bit confusing at times. So in 2020, I had my AMH levels tested. So it's a blood test and I did have to pay a gap to have that tested. I think it was about $90. And that came back with my level being 6.3, which is low. So, you know, my doctor wasn't overly worried about it. And we kind of, I think I'd only just had the bar removed from my arm. So we kind of just thought, you know, let's just let it go and I'll retest it in a year's time and see where I'm at then. And that's what I did. So I went back about a year later and I had my AMH test, my AMH levels tested again, at which point they came in at 15.1. So they actually kind of went up. And having spoken to my fertility doctor, we actually think that that was not correct. Like something kind of went wrong there, or it was a false reading or something like that. Because as a part of my journey last year, I had them tested again and they were down at 7.7. So don't really know what happened in the middle there, but yeah. So either way, they were kind of on the lower side. And so I guess, like, you know, I'd come back from Indonesia, my relationship long-term relationship I'd had over there had ended. And I was just kind of becoming more aware of the fact that I needed to be mindful of my fertility. And it's kind of a strange place to be in because, like, I'd come home and, you know, I'm in that age bracket where most of my friends had started having babies whilst I was living overseas, or they were pregnant, or, you know, so everyone had a lot of kids around them. And whilst I didn't feel like I was behind or like I wasn't feeling like I was missing out, I think I was just very aware that I was in a different place, and that was fine. But I think it just kind of brought like babies and fertility and all those kind of things to the front of mind. But I just kind of figured that, like, when it was all supposed to happen for me, that it would happen and that I didn't really need to stress too much, but we were just considering different things. And then I remember one day reading an article about Jennifer Aniston, and this girl, Jennifer Aniston, received so much so much of a hard time online at certain things for, like, quote unquote, being selfish and not having children. And this article came out, I think it was in Allure magazine at the end of like 2021, I reckon, where she actually shared that she'd had a really hard time going through IVF, and that she was actually, you know, trying all these different things. And she said she would have given anything for someone to have said to her, freeze your eggs and do yourself a favor. And I think that kind of made something click within my brain, like just hearing that. And I kind of figured, all right, like it's time to do something. So last year was a big year for me. I was doing a lot of stuff with the podcast, and then I had decided that I was going to do a bodybuilding competition again. So I spent a good 5 months in prep for that and competed in October last year. So anyone who's been through a bodybuilding prep before or competed in something or had a big task in front of them even knows that when you're fully focused on a goal, it completely takes over your life. So the thought of sort of exploring fertility last year, it just wasn't going to happen. So I competed in October, and then as I kind of started to reverse out of that, and I had some, you know, brain space available and some time available, I decided that I was going to start actually putting some, you know, steps in place and start gathering some information. So when I find something really overwhelming, as I did with this, I was like, okay, first thing I need to do is just get information. Like, I don't have to make any decisions. I don't have to commit to anything. Let's just get information. So in October last year, 2023, I put up a post in my stories just asking any of the women or couples or anyone who's been through the process of like IVF or egg collection or egg retrieval to reach out to me so we can have some conversation about, you know, why they decided to go down that path or who they used and, you know, how they found the process in general, what the costs were, all those kind of things. And I was absolutely blown away by how many people reached out to me that I had no idea had even been through that process themselves, and how wonderful everyone was in sharing their journey and what they'd been through and their numbers and all that kind of thing. And that's what I love so much about, you know, social media community at times, is just, you know, the ability to connect in with people about different topics like this. So October, I put up some stories, and I think it was November last year, I had my very first appointment at ReproMed at the Dulwich clinic. And that was really wonderful. I believe the first appointment I had was bulk build. Again, don't quote me on these things. I have a terrible memory, but I'm 99% sure it was. So I went in and I met with my lovely doctor, and she just explained to me what the process is like, gave me a lot of statistics around, like, I guess the numbers that you would want being my age, and just talked about egg quality and egg numbers and things like that. And she did say to me that for every one baby you would like to have 20, they would like you to have 20 eggs in the freezer. And, you know, that seems like now it seems like a really a high number, but I believe the statistics are that every like egg you have frozen or something, it's like a 5% chance that it will actually survive and turn into a baby or something along those lines. So I understand where the numbers came from, but like now, like fast forward to now, I've become a little bit too fixated on that 20, if I'm being completely honest. So I had that appointment with her, and that was really, really great. And then she organized for me to have my bloods done again to test where my AMH levels were at now. So that was the most recent AMH test that I had. And with Repromed, everything is done on site. So what I loved about dealing with them was that, like, I had my appointment to see her and she said, yes, you need to have more bloods. And I didn't have to go away and make another appointment and come back to have bloods. I just went to the other waiting room. And then like 3 minutes later, one of the nurses calls you through and they take your bloods. Like, it's just, I found it all very, very easy. So she organized to have my bloods done. And then I believe it was in January, I had, I came back and I had a internal scan done. So they were checking like my cervix and like to make sure everything looked good on the inside, that I had a hospitable environment. And they checked my ovaries to see how many follicles I had. So I had 10 on one side and 7 on the other. And she said like, there was no abnormalities and yeah, everything looked good. And the results from my blood test then in regards to my AMH was that it was at 7.7. 7.7, as I said, is on the low side for my age range. I believe she said that, like, quote unquote, normal for someone who's 36 is in the 10 to 25 range. So I found myself in a really strange place mentally, because you can be having an egg retrieval done for elective or medical reasons. So elective is, you know, just because it's your choice to be doing it for whatever reason. Medical, so I could qualify for doing it for medical reasons if my AMH levels were low enough and like due to my age, basically. So if I qualified to be doing it for medical reasons, it meant that I qualified for a Medicare rebate. So what that meant was that it became more affordable to do it. So the more times I do it within the calendar year, the less out of pocket I am per round. So I found myself in this weird place of like, hoping that my number was lower, so like I was less healthy. Well, healthy is not the right word, but you know what I mean. Like, it's just a weird place to be hoping for a worse result for a financial gain. Like, in no other situation in regards to health would I wish for something to be worse. Like, I wouldn't hope that my leg was broken, not fractured, because it would be cheaper. Like, that just seems absolutely ridiculous. So it was just this like really weird mental space, like waiting for those results. And when the results came, I almost felt like relieved, which even saying it just sounds so ridiculous. So it meant that I qualified for the Medicare rebate. So I basically, the next thing I needed to do, and this takes me through to early February this year, I finally got an appointment with a psychiatrist. Now, I required the appointment with the psychiatrist in order to access funds out of my superannuation on compassionate release so that I could use that money to go through this process of collecting my eggs. So the psychiatrist appointment was done through Zoom. It cost me like $400 out of pocket. I think it was actually like $700 for the appointment, and then I got $300 back, which is just extortion. The person was nice enough, but like, we both knew why she was there. Like, I was never going to speak to this person ever again. And it was kind of like, she was like, all right, these are the questions I need to ask you in order to, like, you know, put this through the AT for the, like, in regards to the ATO. And then it's almost like she was like giving me a heads up that like, if I needed to ham it up, this was the time. Like, so I basically had to tell her about how this was affecting my mental health, and that I needed to be able to access this money to do the egg retrieval for those reasons. So I don't know. That part, like, I get it, but it was basically jumping through hoops. Like, I know that, like, there needs to be processes in place for this, but it was just $400 of my money gone. So I got that back. So then I had to apply to the ATO, the Australian Tax Office, with a referral for my doctor at Repromed, the referral from the psychiatrist to let them say, yes, you can take money out of your super, which they did. And then that was late Feb and then takes us through to March. So I'm waiting for that back through to March for the ATO to say, yes, we accept the fact that you are going to be taking, like, you know, having early release from your superannuation fund. At which point then I needed to lodge all of the paperwork through to my superannuation fund in order to get it back. And that process was just an absolute head fuck. Like, and that is on me. I have nobody else to blame. But, like, and this is bad as well. And I really should take better note of my superannuation fund. It's on the list of things for me to do in 2025. But, you know, the address of my super fund was incorrect. There was no nominated account listed on my superannuation fund. So both of those things required different forms to be signed and sent off in hard copy. And then I had to, like, also lodge the one about taking the money out of super, like taking the money out. I had to, like, take my identification into the bank and get them to, I don't know. It was a lot. And so I ended up getting the money out of my superannuation fund in, I think it was late March, and we're in the end of June now. So I believe if people have the money up front, it doesn't take this long to kind of make the decision and then go through. But because I had to sort of, yeah, do all these bits and pieces to take money out so that I could afford to do it, it took a bit longer. So I ended up taking $12,000 out of my super fund, and I had to also supply them with a quote for the amount. I think the quote was like $12,130 or something like that. So I just took the 12 out, and then it all started, I guess, to feel real. Because, you know, I had spent a lot of time agonizing backwards and forwards, like, am I making the right decision? Am I not? Like, am I just throwing, you know, $12,000 away when I might not need it? But it's like it's a gamble, I guess, either way. Like, even like if I was to meet somebody today and in a couple of years' time, we were ready or we wanted to have children, whatever, I would still want to try naturally first, but I don't want to get to 2 years down the track and then find out that I'm having problems and not have had eggs, you know, tucked away in the freezer from 2 years ago, at which point they are going to have a higher quality, from what I've, you know, been led to believe, and then have had the regret. So, you know, I had spent months agonizing backwards and forwards. Do I do it? Do I not? It's a lot of money, you know, but then down the track, you know, $12,000 might seem nothing. So it's just has taken so much of my mental load up until that point. So then once the money came into my account, I was like, okay, this is it. Like, the money's there. Now we just need to do the thing. Now, as someone who is very much a planner, it was sort of, I guess, hard for me to be like, okay, well, you know, if I'm going to do it in June, I need to, like, not plan basically anything else, because, you know, you don't know how anything's going to affect you. You don't know, you know, I still didn't even really know exactly what the process was going to be like. So I decided that, yeah, I was going to do it with my June cycle. And so what I needed to do was go in and collect all of my hormones, all of my injections, and then have them ready at home for when my cycle started. And when my cycle started, I would call up and quote unquote book on. So you let them know that your cycle has started and go from there. So when I went in to pick up all of my hormones, the hormones that I went home with, three. So I went home with three different types that day. So I went home with my FSH medication, so my follicle stimulating hormone, which was Gonal F. And then I went home also with my FSH antagonist medication, which was the Orgalutran, and then also my trigger shot, which was Ovadril. So three different types of injections. The nurse I came home with an A4 sheet with everything very clearly written down, very, very simple, easy to follow instructions. And also we did like a practice of like how to do the injection. Obviously I didn't give it to myself at the time, but into this little like pretend bit of skin, I guess. So I had everything I needed in my little cooler bag and I took that home. Now the hormones that I took home that day cost me just shy of $100. So that I was actually expecting it to cost more. So that wasn't too bad. And I think it was maybe like 3 or 4 days later that my cycle started. So I made the phone call to Reprimed and I booked on. So again, on the phone, they just ran through the different instructions. So for mine, the FSH medication, the Gonal F, I would be I'd be injecting myself with 300 IU of that every day moving forward between the times of 7 and 10 p.m. Now, I decided to do that at 9, knowing that the second injection, which would start on day 6 of my cycle, so that was Orgalutran, that I'd have to administer that between 9 and 10. So just to make things simple, everything was being administered at 9 p.m. So it was on a Sunday that I started. And it's funny when I look back at the videos of myself trying to administer the hormone the very first time, because it, like, I psyched myself out so many times, and really, like, the needle is tiny, and I donate plasma, you know, once a month I try to get there, so like fairly regularly, and that needle is, you know, quite large in comparison. And of course I'm not administering that myself, but I think that actually really helped in the long run, having frequent needles. But yeah, that first night, you know, it was difficult to administer it. So that was, you know, quite funny to look back on. So for the first, so it was Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it was just for the first 4 days. First 4 days, I was just giving myself the one injection. And so that one, you know, again, I'm describing that and how I understand it is basically to like stimulate the follicles so that you have the ability to potentially grow more mature eggs. So that was the first one. Then on the Thursday, which was technically day 6 of my cycle, I was to also add in the antagonist hormone, so the Orgalutran. And that was 250 IU of that. And this one, again, under my understanding, is to basically like stave off or stop you from ovulating so that the eggs can, you know, continue to mature and stay in there until they are, you know, we're ready to harvest them and take them out. So then I continued administering the two injections through for the next week. So the following Monday, I went in to have bloods and an internal scan done. So they're obviously checking my hormone levels with the bloods, and then they were checking my follicles with the internal scan, which was really cool because I could actually see them on the screen in front of me. So the sonographer was like measuring the size of the follicles to see how much they'd grown and how many there were of a certain size. Because, you know, obviously they monitor that, and when they get to a certain size, that's when they are like going to go in and do the retrieval. So I did that in the morning, and then before lunchtime, I had received a text from them saying, yeah, look, it all looks good. We'll book you in again for bloods and scans on Wednesday morning. So just keep doing what you're doing in the meantime. So Wednesday morning, I went in and had my bloods and scans done again. And again, I could see the follicles and how much they'd grown. And so she counted them, and I think I had about 11 that were like of size at that point. And then I got a text message that afternoon saying that we would be, when was it? On Wednesday night, that I was going to administer my trigger shot at 7:50, so exactly 36 hours before the retrieval, which was booked in for 7:50 a.m. on the Friday. So it felt like it flew. So like throughout that period of like 10 or so days, however long it was, I didn't have any like sort of side effects or symptoms or anything from administering those hormones. Like I felt completely fine. And with every day of giving the injections, it got easier. I didn't even really think twice about it. I guess like throughout that time, you know, it's hard to say like what, like I don't really think I had any side effects or symptoms. You know, there was a few days where I had a little bit of a headache, or I was a little bit grouchy, or, you know, I was a little bit tired, but that could have also been life. Like, I don't feel like it was significant enough to blame it on the hormones. And like my life continued as normal. Like I trained as normal. Like, you know, obviously I'm very active. There was no change to my training. There was no change to my appetite, none of those things. So Friday came around, I had to be at Repromed at 7 a.m. For a 7:50 retrieval. I think I was probably feeling a little bit vulnerable at this stage, obviously knowing what you're going in for. All of the staff at Repromed were absolutely wonderful, from the admin to the nurses to the anaesthetists, I can never say that word right, to the people who were in recovery. It was all, everybody was so wonderful. I did feel, I think this is probably like where I started to feel a little bit more emotional, was just around, you know, the fact that I was doing this process alone. And whilst I am so not alone in life, like I have so many wonderful people in my life, the fact that I wasn't doing it with a partner, because I'm in the waiting room and there's two other couples there. So you've got, you know, a man and a woman there, you know, he's there to support her. And whilst I could have asked somebody to be there with me, like I didn't need someone to be there with me, but it's just, I don't know. There's something that kind of like hit in my heart a little bit at that point when I was sitting in the waiting room. So then the nurse takes you through and talks you through a whole bunch of the forms. You sign a bunch of things, and then you get into the gown, and like hair goes in the hairnet thing, and you put your little slipper things on, and then you see the anaesthetist, and he talks you through a bunch of other things. And now when you see the nurse, she asks you if you would like to wake up with the number of eggs written on your hand. And I'd heard about this before, and I knew that I wanted that. So when I came to after the procedure, like, and I'm still like drowsy, first thing I was trying to do was like look at my hand, and I looked straight at my right hand. I think just because I'm right-handed, that was the natural thing to do. And there was nothing written on it. And I was like, what the hell? Like, that's weird. And then I like panicked for a second. And then looked over at my left hand and saw the most perfect looking five I think I've ever seen in my life written in pen. And I felt absolutely devastated, if I'm being really honest. And I couldn't help it. And I just remember like tears just started like silently pouring out of my eyeballs. And I think it was like partly disappointment and partly just like a release of everything I had been doing
since October the year before to have finally got to that point. And like, you really tried, I really, really tried hard to go into it with no expectations. Because there's like, as the type of person I am is that, like, if I want something really bad, I will put in the work. I will do absolutely everything I need. Like, I will just go above and beyond if I know it's going to get me the result that I want. And this was just a part of my life where it didn't matter how much effort I put in. There was nothing I could do to control the outcome. Fuck, I'm getting really emotional. It's the same way I feel about dating to some degree. But, like, it didn't matter how well I did the injections or how, like, on time they were or how healthy I ate that week. Or there was nothing more I felt like I could possibly do to have got a better result. And so, I don't know, like, I just woke up and I looked at it and I felt so disappointed. Because, like, originally, because I had this 20 eggs in the freezer thing in my mind, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to do this so many times to get to 20, and I don't want to do it so many times. As much as the process didn't interfere really with my life, other than having to make sure I stayed up until 9 p.m. I just, you know, I had been hoping for closer to 10. Like, and yeah, so I woke up, felt absolutely devastated, and then felt so guilty for not being happy and for not being grateful. Because I knew that there would be so many women that would have been so happy to have woken up and had 5 written on their hand. And I felt ashamed of myself in that moment for feeling disappointed. But it is just, that is just how I felt at that moment. And, you know, again, I think it was such a release of, like, everything that I'd been through. You know, having to make all these decisions on my own and have all this mental load and just the whole process just taking up so much of my thoughts and energy. And, yeah, it had just been a lot, you know. Again, like, it had been, like, 8 months of carrying it around with me. Anyway, the lovely, lovely lady, there were so many wonderful people in there, but, you know, there was one of the nurses who came straight over to me and just was so reassuring. And she actually shared with me that she'd recently done a retrieval herself. And I don't know, it just helped me kind of regulate, which was really nice. Anyway, so I'm still in recovery as I've kind of come to. I've sat up a bit more. And before you go in, you get to choose what food you'd like to have and what drinks you'd like to have after. So naturally, I ticked every box. So I'm there because she told me I was allowed to. And so I had a sandwich and biscuits and banana bread and crackers and coffee and a juice, all the things. To be fair, I paid a lot to be in there that day, so I'm going to take all my snacks. So I was in there for a while, just kind of having something to eat and drink, which was nice because I had to go in fasted, obviously. And then as time passed a little bit, they asked me if I'd like to get into my clothes. And then they had called mum. So mum came to pick me up at about 10:30. So it's a very fast turnaround. The anesthetic that they use is, like, the guy described it, it's almost like a, you know, more of a sedative than anything else, because they're not, like, cutting you open or anything like that. It's, they go, you know, up through the vagina to take out the eggs. So I was at home by 11 a.m. after making mum take me to Queenie's so I could get a coffee. A proper coffee, not an instant coffee, on the way home. And I felt fine. Like, of course, you're not allowed to, like, drive and stuff like that for 24 hours. But, like, you know, I didn't feel drowsy or anything like that. I just had a... I had a nice relaxed afternoon, watched the Netflix series on the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders from the couch, and went for a little bit of a walk in the afternoon just to like move my body, because that's also what's normal for me. So it felt better to have a nice light walk than to be sitting around for all of the afternoon. I didn't need quite that much rest. In the afternoon, I had a phone call from someone at Repromed. I'm not sure if it, like, exactly if they were, like, in the, I guess maybe in the lab, or, like, a genealogist or something. Again, I'm just throwing words out at this point. Anyway, they called me to let me know that of the 5 eggs that they got, all 5 were of quality. I'm getting so emotional. They were all of good quality and mature enough to go into the freezer, into cryo. So it was a pretty good strike, right? So that was really nice. So, you know, some people might get 5 eggs, but only 3 are of quality enough to go into the freezer. So I was, you know, I did feel happy, obviously, about that. Now, I did experience side effects post-retrieval, and I think they are potentially attributed to the trigger shot more so, which I think is progesterone-based, which is what causes you to ovulate. But anyway, I did experience some bloating for probably 3 or 4 days after the retrieval, and that was quite uncomfortable. I feel like I looked like I could have been pregnant, and I couldn't like suck it in. It was quite uncomfortable, and I was quite backed up as well, which is also a normal side effect post retrieval. So, and the two kind of play into one another, you know. If you can't go to the bathroom for number 2s, you're also going to be quite bloated. So that was not very comfortable, obviously, and it did kind of come and go throughout the day. Probably by the Tuesday, Wednesday, that had started to settle, the bloating side of things. I would say that the constipation side of things is probably still kind of finding its way back to normal, but definitely better than it was towards the start of the week. What I wasn't expecting was how much it was actually going to affect how I felt emotionally. So I ended up actually having the Wednesday as a personal day from work, because I felt really sad. Probably from Monday, Tuesday, I was at work, but I was just not quite feeling myself. Obviously, given what I do and how much passion I have towards mental health, how much I talk about my own mental health, I'm fairly self-aware. But I wasn't expecting to feel how I felt, and I felt really sad, and I felt really lonely, and I felt just, I don't know, just exhausted mentally. And one of my good friends, she, when I was talking to her about it, and she said to me, often when we're going through something, you just squash how you're feeling, you know, you squash down, you know, how it might affect you emotionally, so that you can just get through it, and you just deal with, you know, each task, you just get through it. Then once the thing is done, it's like the floodgates are opened and everything comes out. And I think that's absolutely what happened in this case. I got through what I had to get through, as I always do in life. Like, if I've got to do something, I will just put the hard work in and get it done. But then once I had done it, I was just like this mess. And I hate, actually, mess isn't even the right word. I was just exhausted from having to make the decisions. And even when, even in saying that, I'm so grateful to live in a place where this is something that I can even do, and that I had the financial ability to do it. But I just, I think as well, like, I felt a little bit sad for myself that I was in a place where I had to do it. Because I would love to be in a relationship and I would love to be with someone planning a family, but that's not where I am. And, you know, I'm allowed to feel a little bit sad for that. Like, I'm not desperate for that, but it's something I would like in life. And I think that just obviously going through this process and going through it alone highlights the fact that you're alone and that you're doing it. And I think, yeah, all of that just kind of came to the surface. And I just needed to take a little bit of extra time for myself. And so Wednesday I had, you know, a bit of a, you know, I use the word self-care, but it was really just like me allowing myself to switch off and process what I'd been through. And I'm so grateful for all of the wonderful people who have reached out to me. And there are people, like so many people from my community that I have been connecting in with through my social media page, who've been through, you know, lengthy journeys with IVF and trying to conceive and carry the term and you know, way more, you know, than what I've been through. And these people have been in my stories, giving me suggestions on how to give my injections so that they hurt less or bruise less, or, you know, reassuring me that, like, you know, it's not about the number, it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality. And, you know, people that I wouldn't see in day-to-day life, like, being there to help cheer me on. And I'm just so grateful for that connection. And I think that's why, you know, part of the reason why I've shared so much of this journey on my social media, on my Instagram page, is because it's helped me feel less alone. Like, creating conversation around fertility is a whole nother thing, but the connection that I've been able to get is, I'm just so thankful for. And social media gets such a bad rap, and, you know, there's both sides to it, but it's brought so much to me in this space, and I feel so lucky. But also it's been so great to create conversation and make fertility, you know, treatments more visible online, because there are so many people who are going through this and I had no idea. And, you know, if you know, just seeing my stories or hearing that I've shared it or that I've, you know, talked about it or whatever helps one other person going through their journey for whatever reason, then it's all fucking worth it. So, yeah, this podcast episode turned out to be way more emotional than I was thinking that it was going to be. So in terms of paying for the retrieval, I paid just over $10,000 for the retrieval, or for the cycle, I should say. And of that $10,000, the amount that I got credited back was $5,300. So that, and it was just over $10,000. So it's like $4,700 or so out of pocket for the first round. And I paid $1,500 on the day for the day surgery and the anesthetist, you all know what I'm talking about. Anyway, which is exactly why I ticked every single box on the snack box. So I paid $15,000 for a chicken sandwich, crackers and cheese, banana bread, cookies, a coffee, and a juice on top of that. So the next time I go through it, and the amount I will get back will be more. So I can't remember. I've got it written down. I've got so much paperwork. But because I qualify to be doing the egg retrieval for medical reasons, every time I do it within the calendar year, I'm covered by the Medicare safety net. So it becomes cheaper for me, which is why I'm trying to, as many times as I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it now.
So I made the decision to go back to back. I had an appointment with my doctor at ReprimeD this week gone on the Thursday. It's now Saturday. And spoke to her. She said there's no like testing or proof that, you know, if you take a month off and then do another cycle that it affects the numbers. And given that I feel quite good, she was happy for me to go straight into another cycle. So I will book on with my next period, which is due this week coming. She is going to, we're going to increase my FSH medication of gonal F from 300 IU to 450 and see what that does. Again, I'm trying to go into this with no expectation, because just because we're doing that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to get more eggs. And then after this cycle, I will decide what's next. I think I'm slowly letting go of the idea of having to get to 20. I really just had that in my head being like, well, if I want to have one baby one day, then I need to get to 20. But like, I've also spoken to so many women who, you know, had six eggs and had a baby from the six eggs, or had three eggs and had a baby. So, you know, I need to remember as well that obviously this is a business and they would like you to do more. But also, I don't feel like my doctor is trying to manipulate me. I think she's giving me facts and I'm hyperfixating on 20. Because even, again, like, let's say in 2 years' time, I want to start a family. I'm going to try naturally first. If that doesn't work, and if I burn through all my eggs and I'm not successful, I can do another egg retrieval. So, like, it's not like if I don't do it now, I can't do it ever. It's just that as I continue to get older, the quality of my eggs gets lower, and the, you know, the possibility of it being successful gets less. So that's just facts. That's just biology, I suppose. I have learned so much about how my body works and about both the female and male reproductive systems in the last few months. I can't even explain how much. I can't believe how little we actually know. Like, for a lot of my adult life, I didn't truly understand that I can only get pregnant for like a certain number of days within the month, like within my cycle. And how many times I would have panicked in my earlier years for really no reason. It's just insane. We really should be teaching our young girls more. And anyway, so I'm about to go into another cycle. Probably by the time this gets published, I will have started. So yeah, just really wanted to make a episode about what I've been through, in the hopes that, you know, like I said, when I had started looking for information, I listened to quite a few podcasts myself. To be honest, I found like once I actually did like started the cycle, it was pretty easy. It was just all of the thinking about it, all the mental load, all the paperwork that I personally in my journey experienced beforehand that made it a lot more stressful. I'm sure that I have missed something that I've wanted to include in this episode, absolutely. But if you have any questions about what I've been through or want to talk about it, feel free to reach out to me either through the High Tide, Low Tide podcast Instagram page, or through my personal one, which you can find linked in the High Tide, Low Tide one. I'm super open about everything that I've been through and would love to connect in with other people about their experiences. But otherwise, guys, thank you very much for tuning into this, what ended up being a very emotional episode. And, you know, I can't wait to one day look back and listen to this, you know, once I have actually started a family, and, you know, knowing that, you know, we do things for our future self that we'll be grateful for. So again, thank you very much for joining me today, guys. Have a wonderful day, whatever you are doing. Talk to you soon. Dewey. If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit the subscribe button and leave me a 5-star review. Even better, if you know someone who might benefit from listening to it, please tell them all about it. You'll find more information from today's episode in the show notes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on High Tide, Low Tide, please email me at Lisa, spelled L-E-E-S-A, at hightidelowtideau.com or DM me on Instagram at hightidelowtideau. See you next time.